Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Lawrence Landry, Jim Harley, and Russ Brooks will be joining us in a bit. Jim, just as a little note, Jim is travelling back from Twickenham as a passenger. So if you hear sat nav, or if you hear weird noises, etc., or if the signal drops out when he's talking, obviously my editing skills aren't up to scratch, that'll be why. But yeah, this week we're going to start by talking about the Gloucester game against Nottingham this weekend. Then we're going to move on to the internationals and the World Cup, first weekend of the World Cup, which was fun-filled, action-packed, controversies galore, hot takes from myself, I have to be honest, on Twitter, and others. We'll just quickly touch up on, did you enjoy the weekend of the rugby, Loz? Did you enjoy the fact that we've got all this rugby over the next 8 weeks?
Yes. Sorry, I thought I'd play you up with the signal then.
Oh, you git.
Yeah, it's nice to have on. There's been all this build up to it, and for it to finally get come around is great. It's also means we're that much closer to our 2 trips away, which we've been looking forward to as well, being able to go and sample the atmosphere live. So, yeah, looking forward to that. It was certainly an entertaining weekend. My negatives are main, that I just want to kick in on the vote before we go any further are the fact that the choirs that they've chosen to use in the National Anthem have just taken the passion out of that. And what I don't know whether it was the same for you, but on the couple of games that I saw, the ITV or the French coverage which ITV are using doesn't have the it doesn't have the sound mics for the atmosphere in the right place. So the crowd sounded very quiet and dispassionate compared to what I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
Having watched that game, we commented, having watched the game together on Friday, didn't we, about how you just couldn't hear the crowd. I'm sorry, but that would have been a raucous French crowd on Friday night, and they sounded ever so flat, and that to me, I think, is a sound effects mic problem.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that we'll come on to the game specifically later, but I did think that the game last night, the Wales Fiji game, the atmosphere really came across. Now, I don't know whether that's the stadium effects as well. It's a much more tight stadium, obviously, than Stade de France, so maybe that has an impact. But you're right, I think definitely noticeable, a few little weird and wonderful things. The choirs, oh my god. You want to like them because, you know, it's really nice. They've got all these disenfranchised kids who are, you know, grown up on the wrong side of the tracks, and they're giving them another chance and all this sort of stuff. But
I don't care where they've grown up. I want them gone.
Right. On that note, shall we crack on about the Gloucester game? I know that Jim and Ed were there. So as I wasn't, I thought I'd take over the Ed role of comparing for the moment. So with that, it seems fitting that, as he normally doesn't get to speak, the person we probably should start with is Jim. What were your thoughts?
Well, it was a long time coming. It seems like the closed season's been forever. Obviously, no pre-season games, because these aren't pre-season. These are competitive fixtures, albeit a cup. So, yeah, it's kind of second week in September. It's quite late to be starting off. So brilliant to get back into King's Home. Beautiful day. And a little bit disappointed, really, with the crowd. Thought we might have slightly better numbers, but obviously it's a big, big day for, you know, rugby on the international stage. So I think a lot of people, you can always tell, it's those expensive golden 1873 seats that were the empty ones. There was a lot of people that had season tickets but hadn't attended, so that kind of made it a bit of a quieter atmosphere than it otherwise would have been. But yeah, cracking performance by the guys. You know, couple of guys really stepped up and seemed to perform, looking like they want to make that up. Their shirts, you know, theirs for next week, certainly, and then the week after. So, putting out the good performance, and I thought some really big hits as well, you know. So it was a good competitive fixture, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how we go, because obviously some of the other fixtures, between Premiership and Championship clubs didn't all go the same way, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah, on that, Jim. I mean, I thought the I was quite surprised how poor Nottingham were. I think I had seen that there's a few players, some of their bigger players had been maybe left out, but
Yeah, I mean, I don't know their squad, so it was
no,
hard.
this
You know,
is it's
they
difficult to
announced
judge,
their
isn't
match
it?
day, and I'm like, I don't know who any of these guys are. You know,
No,
sorry.
I mean, I think I got it from Twitter, etc., that a few of their sort of standalone players, you know, who've performed in the last couple of years, weren't there. I was impressed by their number 11, who scored a really good try for Nottingham. You
Yeah.
know, he basically took on half the team, didn't he? Which I thought was, and it was nice. You know, it was good that a couple of their lads, you know, they definitely tried things. They didn't stop playing. But the big difference for me, bearing in mind you think the majority of our squad there were certainly under the age of 23, and a lot of them were under 20, the physical difference was surprising. Just that, you know, as you said, Jim, big hits that Gloucester were,
Yeah,
they
there
were
seemed to
bigger,
be
fitter.
more aggression. There was definitely, when it came to that impact in the tackle and the impact at ruck time, the Gloucester team, although not necessarily bigger and certainly not older, but they just seemed more aggressive. That like it meant a little bit more to them, maybe. And I think, you know, that. We've talked about it before. Players are so good. The difference between the top teams and the teams in the middle of the Premiership, sometimes it's just about, you know, how much you want it. And I think our guys really showed that they wanted it, which was fantastic to see.
So, with regards to that, how was the gameplay? I appreciate we weren't talking our first 15 was out playing, but we've been highly critical of the game plan and the amount of kicking that we've had. What was it like? Because I know we scored a few tries and there wasn't any kicks for goal, but then we don't traditionally seem to go for goal anymore unless it's a last resort. We don't like to kick for the corner and try and get the rolling ball going. How was the overall style of play?
From set phase, from line out scrum, some really nice intricate moves, and I think that was quite good to see. Again, still not a huge amount from multiple phases. It's difficult to judge because of, you know, this team's probably never played together, you know, and outside of training and maybe that sort of warm up game against Newport. Or sort of warm up hit out against Newport a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure there would have been a huge amount of continuity, but I thought the sort of
See
set the set play the set phases looked really good. And then yeah, there was when we only really box kicked it from our 22.
Right. Well, that's when you'd want us to be doing it. At least we're not box kicking it on their 10 meter line.
No, I mean, I think there might have been one or two, which was basically because it was crap ball. We were out of position. You know, we didn't have our backs in the right position. We need to use the ball. So what are you going to do? You're going to put pressure on them. That's fine. I haven't got a problem with this every so
There's a
often.
time and place for kicking, isn't there, at the end
Yeah,
of it?
time and place. You know, one thing I did like actually, and I think George Skivington referenced it in his post-match, which was he was very impressed. I thought George Barton had an absolutely superb game,
Yes, he
and.
did.
Yeah, and out for first of all from the tee, and he was nailing it from everywhere, which is really encouraging.
That's what
But
he normally does, in all fairness to him. That's
yeah.
his, the one takeaway with him. You know, you're probably going to get 85, 90% success rate with the kick.
But what was really good, there was one particular bit of play in the first half where it just, you know, these little things you think, oh, that's a nice, I like that. That's nice. Again, ironically from a kick, but it was ball came scrum sort of to the right hand side of the post near enough halfway. Ball comes back, goes a couple of phases to the left, then basically switch back to the right. George Barton switches back and puts a lovely diagonal kick in behind. Not quite a 50-22, but just intelligent play using the space that's been developed. And just really good. Jim, did you think, I mean, one thing in terms of other players that made their mark, I thought Josh Hathaway did a really good job when he came on. He had to come on quite early, didn't he, for a HIA to Jack Reeves.
Oh, you have to forgive me. I'm not so au fait with some of these names.
the winger who scored the little ship and chase over the top with the
the winger with the blue scrum cap.
Yes.
Yeah, he was quality. Really getting stuck in. You know, and I guess if you're a winger in the Gloucester squad, you've got to be working hard, because we're not shy of some skills in that department. So, you know, if you're an up and coming winger and you want to get, you know, on the bench, then that means that one of the big three that we've got are not going to be on the bench. I think he played well. I was really impressed with Barton as well. I thought Barton was fantastic. You know, he put in some big, big hits himself, rode some big hits. So, I think the future's bright, really, with some of our youngsters coming through. And if they get some good opportunity, they weren't playing to quite this restrictive kind of game plan that we've seen previously. You know, the squad have been playing, like you were alluded to, with the box kicks and stuff. So, yeah, it'd be good to see a bit more of that against Saracens next week.
So just one last thing with Barton from me. Is he now looking like he could step up, say Hastings has a setback in his recovery for fitness? Is he looking like he could start the first Premiership game against Harlequins?
I would say so. I wouldn't have a problem with it. I mean, I think Barton deserves... I mean, we don't know what he does in training. I mean, this is the caveat. You know, if he's not doing what they want in training, then that has an impact about whether he gets selected or not. But if he's continuing on this type of thing, I think, you know, he's now got a bit of experience behind him. He's played in some big games. I think the biggest one, I think probably his best game and his biggest game was probably Bordeaux away, if we're being honest. I think that was the game that I thought showed that he could live at this level.
La Rochelle at home as well, when O'Gara singled him out and said that he was going to be a good player down the line. He knows a little bit about fly half play. I think he was, and that was one of his earlier starts. That's why I asked the question. And I appreciate it. And my next point note that I've got is they don't play enough games, because you mentioned about his team not playing together. Obviously, if they're not playing, they're not going to come on. And that's probably what's actually counted as a negative towards his development so far. But I personally feel as though we need to have, especially in the season like this, they need to organise some sort of, not an A-League, because there'd be too many fixtures, but they need to have half a dozen or so Monday night fixtures where the people who aren't getting game time can get a game. Because otherwise you're just not going to develop these players. When are they going to get game time? You're just going to throw them in at the deep end? You're not, are you? You're just going to, oh, he hasn't made it, and he's going to either have to try and find somewhere else as we try the next next big thing. You've got to give them a chance to actually get out there and play, because that's how they'll learn the game and show you whether they can do it.
Agreed. I think the other, just a one little quick final note in it, which is we're going to have to practice the name, because we're going to be saying it a lot, I think. Fozagbon, the prop we signed from London Irish, the under-20s prop, actually funny, genuinely funny. There was laughter in the crowd where he shook off a Nottingham attempted tackle, like brushed him, swatted him aside, put him on his ass, and there was genuine laughter from the crowd, and you can tell very early on, you can tell he's going to be a bit of a fan's favourite if he continues his meteoric rise and what is expected of him. He could be one of those signings we look back on and go, how the hell did we get him? Because
scrimmage? First and foremost, he's played tight air prop. He has to scrimmage.
Yeah. Well, again, difficult to judge, because Nottingham were dreadful. I mean, right. They got shoved everywhere on Saturday. I think they ended up with one. I think there was one penalty for Nottingham, which looked like it was a slip bind, but everything else was all Gloucester. We were shoving them off their own ball. It was quite, yeah. It was a very comfortable performance from a pack point of view. So he'll have bigger tests, but I have to be honest, he looked useful and quite exciting. So that's good. Thank you very much for stepping in there, Loz, for doing a bit of comparing. We're going to pause. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the World Cup. Russ has joined us, which is good because I'm sure he's got his own thoughts on a few of the controversial decisions across the weekend and the rugby generally. But we'll start by, when we come back, we're talking about the opening ceremony and the beginning of the World Cup. And then we'll go into the some of these very interesting games. Right. So the World Cup started on Friday. Finally, and we're all excited about it. You know, there's going to be a feast of rugby. It was an interesting game to start the tournament because it was built up as this almost all or nothing clash. But it felt a bit of, I don't know about you guys, I felt a bit of anticlimax. I think France controlled it, other than the first 5-10 minutes. I think France controlled it pretty well, ended up running out comfortable winners. You know, New Zealand didn't even get a point. And France now look pretty well set for the rest of the group. Russ, as you've joined us now, your thoughts on that? First of all, should we talk about the opening ceremony? Because you enjoyed that, didn't you?
Yeah, it was something. I mean, someone put a good point up on Twitter that there's never been a good opening ceremony. And I can't say I watched them avidly, so but nothing sticks in the memory. So they've probably made a good point on that. I was just surprised at how cliched French it was. Like, to the point that it was someone on a bike delivering baguettes.
That was the Oscar-winning actor.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's what I mean. They were all quite well-known French musicians, actresses, actors. Fair play to them.
Did it look like a scene from Hello, Hello?
It genuinely did at times, but apparently I think there was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek parody. I was disappointed that they didn't go on strike halfway through. Or some trucks like barricaded the way. What made it better though is that they had Miles Harrison commentate on it. And I shit you not, at one point there's a tower in the background in Paris. I don't know much, but I know what that is, and I'm pretty sure most people did. So I don't know if I need Miles Harrison to go. That, of course, is the Eiffel Tower. I'm just sat there thinking, bloody hell, ITV are paying you for this insight. And it like that, all right, that one's a bit extreme. But like, so the obvious thing was there was a hat and they're like, and it turned into a game of rugby over the hat. And it was really obvious, but it was just cringe that you had Miles Harrison kind of describing what it was. So
what happens with the commentary, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah.
They have this some sort of obligation, or I must keep talking. Rather than just letting you watch and enjoy, there's this need to fill the silence. Whereas actually, when you've got music and dance and all that sort of thing, you don't want a commentary.
There's a few commentators who need to go to the Richie Benno School of Commentating. Needs to be said.
We can talk about the pundits another time. As an aside, I'd say the only one who stands head and shoulders above the rest is Sam Warburton. The rest, I'd like, do what Jim said. But going back to the ceremony, it was painful because it did take you out of it. I think if no one was talking, I could have got the narrative, and I'm not exactly renowned for my love of French theatre. I could have figured out what was going on, so anyone else could. In terms of the game, I thought it was quite enjoyable. To be fair, New Zealand scored first, and it was a hell of a line that set up the try, and they looked like they were going to be, but France just did exactly what they needed to do. I think it's really good for the competition that France won. They look pretty good. I don't know what else there is to say about that game, really. And it wasn't a bad game.
No.
It wasn't memorable, was it? There's no...
No.
Other than that, there was a good bit where, because everyone hyped up about Bowden Barrett versus DuPont and who was the smarter, and there's a great moment and it was a really good atmosphere. I didn't pick up on it when we watched it, but watching it back on the highlights, there's one where Barrett's and DuPont are fighting for the ball and they're both going for touch and DuPont just lets him go. And so they get the line out and you can just see this moment. Like the noise was amazing, but it's just a moment where Barrett realizes he's been done and he's just been mugged off by DuPont. Cause I think they were just tussling and he just that game awareness. There were some nice little moments. I think it could have gone downhill as a World Cup. I feel like France needed to win that game more than New Zealand. Because otherwise they could have been stereotypical French bottling the big occasion.
Well, it started that way with the All Blacks scoring after 2 minutes, didn't they? You're thinking, oh, Christ, here we go. All Blacks have World Cup time and they've turned up.
Yeah.
I think it definitely shows, Sorry, Jim, go.
No, I think the fact that New Zealand scored so early on, it is actually, perversely, a really good thing for France because it's the way they dealt with it. Mm. Because the France of old would have fallen apart a little bit, I think, and panicked and conceded more and more and more. Whereas what they actually did was go, oh, that's not very good, come on. And they gradually got better and better. And it wasn't until the 60-minute mark where they actually looked, you know, the better significantly the better team. And like you said, Russ, I think it's really important for the nation to get behind the team. I said before, I think New Zealand will come back from the defeat stronger. I think if France had lost, they'd have really, really struggled to come back stronger. I think it would have knocked their confidence because they've got so much pressure, that weight of a nation. So for me, other than the quiet national anthems, and actually I thought, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the Haka anyway. I'm a bit tired of it. But that Haka seemed a little bit dulled as well. I don't know where they get the stick from.
Oh yeah, the stick can just get in the bin, can it? I mean, it was ridiculous.
They're just adding more and more props. I just look.
Yeah. Taking that speary, shieldy, whatever it was thing. I mean, I'm sure it's got a proper traditional title. I don't want to be rude about it, but
what
I think that maybe goes with what Lars was saying about the. The sort of the crowd microphones.
Yeah.
Maybe we didn't get the best audio on that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, to be fair though, it's the wrong hacker as well. Yeah. I fundamentally look. Just do the one we all know, the one that's been
the 70s dad dance one.
The 70s dad dance one. It looks good. I think it looks far better. And to be honest, I think the rugby public, the people who don't tune into the rugby routinely, they'll know the old hacker, is in inverted commas. We don't need to see the slitty throat one. I just don't, it's pathetic.
What gets to me most about that is they do the slitty throat one, yet there's not uproar about that, them slitting the throats or gesturing along the lines of that. But there's uproar if you dare to stand up and answer the challenge or whatever,
I think what annoyed me is they get pandered to and we're all sick of it. There were no props for the Fijian wall dance pre-match before Wales, which I actually thought is a far more impressive spectacle anyway.
Yeah.
Because they don't big it up. No big airs and graces. You know, to be fair, Fiji do it, crack on. And it's the same
as Samoa and Tonga.
Yeah, exactly.
Tonga. The All Blacks.
It was that point, Loz, and I think it just feels like it's more pandered to. We're going to come on to some moaning about how the tier two nations are treated anyway, aren't we? But it doesn't help again, does it?
Not at all. Just a little aside though as well, just around New Zealand. They will get through the group because they're going to be too good for Italy and they're going to win the other games. But one thing I would say is they are massively underpowered. You can tell, we all know why they're not going to win the World Cup. Their pack is nowhere near good enough. And look, I'm sure this is kind of come back to bite me on the arse, but I I have to be honest, there are certain statements I'm going to make tonight, which I'm pretty confident on. And that one is one of the more confident ones. I cannot see New Zealand winning the World Cup with that pack. It's just simply not good enough. They will have to do something miraculous with their back play to be challenging the top teams. So that's my take. Moving
can't
on.
Really
now.
Argue too much. That,
I mean, moving on to some of the other games. We'll finish with England because we all have to eat a little bit of humble pie, I think. And I'm, you know, I'll go first on that one. But we'll finish with that.
It's quite a tasty humble pie.
It is. I enjoyed it thoroughly when I was watching on Saturday evening. Let's go and move on to. We'll just rattle through the other teams. We'll then get to the Wales, Fiji, but. Ireland, Romania, as expected, 80 points plus. Other than the first minute when Romania scored and everyone thought, oh, hello.
I felt they should have blown up and then held the result.
Yeah, I know. Everyone got a little excited. But it was never in doubt. Ireland, far superior. Sexton with two tries, I think, wasn't it? You can't learn a lot about it because it's Romania. With the greatest respect in the world, they're not the team they were 30 years ago. They are a shadow of their former selves, and they're only in the World Cup because Spain got chucked out of it. So, you know, it's just a shame, really. Scotland, South Africa, Jim, and then I'll come to you, Loz.
I've seen it.
Oh, okay, well, that's easy enough then. Jim, Scotland, South Africa. It was a bit of an arm wrestle, and then South Africa just had a bit more arm than Scotland.
Yeah, I missed the contentious moment on about 2.5 minutes, actually.
Mm.
But I think I started watching on about 3.5 minutes. But yeah, it was just one of those games where you thought, oh, Scotland are doing all right here because they're not conceding. But you kind of just knew that they needed to take their chances, and unfortunately, when they had that break, and it was a fantastic break, and you got Van der Merwe there ready to receive the pass, they got a 3-on-1, and. Was it a little bit selfish? I don't know, but it wasn't the best play in the world, put it that way, because they had a real opportunity to get in on the corner. And I think when you're playing against the very best teams in the world, like South Africa certainly are, you've got to capitalize every single time. You can't afford to be missing those sorts of chances, and that was the chance they had in the game. If they were able to control the scoreboard by having that and then a couple of penalties here and there, then they may have worried South Africa a little bit.
I mean, the thing, but you make a good point about taking chances, Jim, because my takeaway for South Africa is it Limbuck or whatever their 10's called? I can't.
Limbuck.
Thank you. As great as that no-look crossfield kick was, his goal kicking is proper ropey, and they're not going to beat Ireland.
Well, he got hooked off, didn't he?
Yeah.
The fastest kicking, wasn't he, from quite early on.
I mean, they're not going to beat Ireland if they can't kick their goals, or that could be their Achilles heel later in the tournament. If they don't find a goal kicker with the kind of game plan they play, let's be honest, the winners of that match, I bet Ireland are enjoying those two teams kick 7 bells of shit out of each other. But the one in the second minute, I know we're going to come on to the Curry red. If that's a red, the Creel one was even worse. And he's not even been cited, so he's free to play.
No, I mean, it's just remarkable.
That's an absolute joke.
Yeah. Well, this is where if you're, we'll come on to this, everyone comes to Curry, but this is the issue wider about the World Cup, and some of the refereeing generally has been interesting. Just on the South Africa-Scotland game, I thought, you're right, Jim, the biggest issue was Scotland didn't take the chances. I mean, their line-out was atrocious. It got to a point in the second half where it was almost like, if you went back to 1995, they weren't even lifting. It was utterly shambolic.
The overthrows were significant, weren't they? And, yeah. And you know, they had a couple of lineouts in pretty good attacking situations, and then just didn't get the ball. And you know, the one lineout that went well went to one of the centres, didn't it? I mean, it's yeah, you've got to get a set piece. And actually, I know we're not talking about it yet, but I thought Fiji's lineout was really good, and that was something that, you know, they obviously worked on. So I'm sure Scotland's lineout will improve for their next game, but their next game is, you know, it's too late. That you've got to enter the World Cup with your set piece being 100%. You can't expect to improve over the course of you know, a few weeks. That's not good enough.
No, I mean, South Africa's lineup is superb. I mean, you think about who they're up against. It's not too bad, is it?
Yes,
and Mostert, and then Schneiman comes on for Etzebeth. You know, it's not a bad lineup. But you look at you know, Scotland, you'd think with Gray and Gilchrist, they're two really good line-out operators, but it wasn't the jumpers. The throwing was absolutely shocking. I mean, it really was. It was like, and I think that's the problem. I don't know if that's not an easy fix. If your hookers are missing that badly, I'm not sure that's an easy thing to change. That's, again, it's amazing. Every time you hear, whenever you hear Scotland in the World Cup or in a big game, oh, they were very brave. They were very brave. And you're like, yeah, they were brave. But bravery isn't really what you want. You want winning. So which we'll come on to now, a team that were brave and won and probably didn't deserve it. And that's Wales. First of all, for everything, I think I felt anticlimactic about the New Zealand-Fiji game. Sorry, New Zealand France game. The Fiji Wales game was everything and more than what we wanted and expected. It was an absolutely brilliant game of rugby.
It was fantastic. Wales were lucky. I'm sorry, I'm not just being an England supporter here and just trying to do them a bad one. They played well, don't get me wrong, but they were lucky. Randrada would catch that ball 99 times out of 100 and probably have got closer. Well, mind you, having said that, he could have gone underneath the post the way that fly-off was kicking. He would have still bloody missed, but no. That's not the point. But they had... I don't want to make this entirely about the referee. I want to, they had some very harsh calls against them. But they played rugby. They played some proper rugby. They played good rugby. They didn't run it from everywhere. They were, if it was on, they went. And really, if they were in the last 40 metres, so they're from the 10-metre line to their try line, they were quite pragmatic about kicking the ball and how a game should be played. But my God, if they chose to run, didn't they ever run it well? And they scored some fabulous tries. And it's one of those things that you think if they'd had the... I can't find too many faults of the game, but then they still don't look like as though they could win. They play some rugby where you think, my God, this team could win the World Cup, but actually they managed to somehow end up in the position where you think, nah, that's never going to happen. And they managed to give Wales, I think, a bit too many chances. But I can't put my finger on what their problems are, really, because I think up front they got a decent enough pack.
Russ, what do you reckon?
They're missing Munts, aren't they? Who was superb, their fly half. So they've got a 10 who's drafted in, who's not used to that system. I personally, I think they'll probably take, you know, they'll be disappointed they lost. But that those two losing bonus points, I don't think this group's done yet, because I could see them beating Australia. Because I think Australia are probably there for the taking.
Australia are in trouble now with Wales having won that match.
Yeah,
I think.
And I think actually Wales aren't necessarily through yet, because I could see Wales losing to Australia. I think this is a very open group. I get what you're saying about them being lucky, Loz. I think Wales did play quite well for for 60 minutes. That's
I'll
the
tell
best.
You something now. If they didn't, sorry to speak over you, but if they did not have Dan Biggar at fly half, they'd have lost that game.
Biggar was superb. Rafael, when he came off the bench, the hit by Josh Adams. So there's 2 points I want to make. Wales have equaled the
No, they broke
the World Cup record and broke the Six Nations record all the other way around for the most tackles in the game. They did defend superbly. They put it on themselves, but Bigger was superb. I thought North had one of the better games I've seen him play in a long time. His lines were superb. You know, they did play quite well, but Fiji deserved to win. And talk about the refereeing afterwards, because it really annoyed me. It's not just about Wales, you know, it's not just because it was for Wales. It was that was an atrocious refereeing display that did impact the game. The bit that really annoyed me was Carly four or five times said, was like, this is your final warning. Fiji one pull down at a more, which it was a real cynical thing, but straight to his pocket, really inconsistent. Williams should have gone to the bloody bin, but rolled around like he'd been shot and got away with it. And those yellow cards would have made a difference. And I, you know, Wales were very lucky. The other thing, sorry, Ed, that really annoyed me was how much back chat from that Welsh team. You know, we joke about it, Bigger pushed his luck. Liam Williams.
He was absolutely screaming Williams, at one point.
And Gareth Davis just... It was absolutely ridiculous. And any other ref, I think, would have punished them a lot harder. But, you know, I hate singling out individual referees, but Carly was very poor. That's one of the worst. I can't remember a worse World Cup.
Luke Pearce or Wayne Barnes, two of the other people that are over there, would not have put up with that.
No. Barnes no is way. On the line, you know.
And oh, yeah, just, but you can't, awful, he can't.
No, I know, Ed. But the point I'm making is I'm awful developing refs and giving them opportunities. But when you've got someone of like that, put Carly on the line and let him see what it's like. You know, I'm awful letting the refs grow and develop. But that was poor. And it had a big impact on that game.
I'll come to Jim in a second, just on a few incidents particularly, but just on the Carly thing, right? I think we can all agree that the New Zealand South Africa friendly a few weeks ago, Carly refed that really well.
I know, that's what was so disappointing.
And he got a lot of praise for it as well, deservedly so. I thought, you're right. I
said he was brilliant.
The two aspects for me, and I'll come on to the incident, specific incidents in a second. Just one thing to mention is, Fiji did drop the ball over the line twice. Mm. We'll come back to one of those incidents in a minute. But you know, Fiji were a bit of their own worst enemy, because not only you have the two drop balls on the line, you also had the last play, the ball that comes out to Semi Randrada. If you actually look at the way that if the fly half or the center inside center, I don't know who's got the ball at the time. If he just looks to his left, there's an easy pop pass, and probably looking at the way that the players were angled and the rest of it, and the size of the Fijians who would have had the ball, he'd have been under the post. He didn't need to throw the Hollywood pass to Semi. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, 99 times out of 100, that's going to go into his breadbasket, and he's going to slide over and probably get quite close to the post. It's one of those things. I think my reaction probably was echoed around the country, unless you were on the Welsh side of the border, of just slumped on the floor in absolute despair because you thought this is going to be great. But going back to the first drop ball over the line, this is my massive criticism of Carly. I can argue 100%. I agree that he went too late on the yellow cards. Absolutely right. But Jim, how was that not a penalty try for the first one, when the Welsh hooker, no arms, it's not even... I'm convinced Carly was looking at the wrong player.
Yeah, well, actually, there was two players. I only saw a short video today where you can clearly see it's actually two players that both do the illegal tackle. And it's the one is just, you know, proper Farrell-esque tucked arm. Shoulder straight into the what would be the knee sort of area of the player. And yes, it's kind of what you need to do on the try line.
You still got to wrap
because that's what you used to do. That's what you used
very
to
Dylan
do.
Hartley like, wasn't it?
Right, that's what you used to do. You know, to trot the player, but actually, I cannot comprehend. How that wasn't given And we talked about Carly, but I think it's the TMO.
Yeah.
The TMO has a massive, massive job to say, actually, no, I disagree. I believe it's an illegal tackle and it has affected the ball carrier's ability to score. It should be a penalty try. It should be a yellow card. There was the try that Fiji scored.
I think this is
what I think the stats do lie, because what is it like? Was it 17 or 19 penalties?
Yeah.
That Wales gave away, but that's how many were awarded to Fiji.
Yeah.
Not how many, because so if you give away four penalties in one phase and then score, then there's zero penalties been awarded.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And he still didn't give a yellow card. And I don't think that's right. It's happened before plenty of times that the try has been scored and players still go to the bin because it's cynical. And I think that should have happened. And I think also the TMO should be stepping in because they're in this much, you know, easier environment where they can take notes and they could actually say to the referee, just to let you know, that is now 12 penalties or, you know, whatever.
Can I just add, Jim, I agree 100%, because there was the one where they did score and it somewhat, there was, he had his arm out for advantage and he had said to them the phase before that was a final warning. And it really bugs me when refs then don't go back and bin the player anyway. And I really think that is a really good idea and should be an intervention that the TMO literally just goes, by the way, mate, don't forget you were playing advantage. So and so needs to go here for that infringement. Because I think it is easy for the refs to forget in amongst everything else that's going on. But the TMO, like you said, they've got all that equipment there. It's just really easy to go, by and way, that bloke needs to take a walk for 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the TMO, I don't think particularly had a good game. I felt the two incidents, particularly that one, is a really good example of where I think you're wrong. In terms of the Fiji yellow card, absolutely no problem with it. It was a really cynical. It was a really cynical. Everyone's keep going, oh, it was the first infringement in the 22. So it was.
Card's been brought in for.
It was a cynical 20. It was a cynical drop of a maul. That's absolutely fine. I've got no problem with that at all. I do have a problem with the fact that Carly didn't bin the Wales player for the eighth, I mean, penalties he had at the top. And I definitely don't agree with the fact that I'm pretty sure, as I said, he was looking at the wrong player in that incident where the hooker had gone with the shoulder. I'm convinced of it. He was looking at the wrong player. And that's where the TMO has got to say, Matthew, just to remind you, we're looking at the player at the lower end of the screen. You know, I think that's where we need to be looking at it.
Have we got an issue with French directors again?
The TMO could have turned around and said, Matt, you need to have a look at the actions of the number two here, because it was blatantly clear it was a hooker. You could see the number. He rolled his shoulder in without wrapping so
number
much.
Nine, whatever it was,
number two shirt.
Jim made a point about the French directors, and I think it is a good one, because going back to the Scotland South Africa game, the commentators had to sort of defend themselves in the second half and say, look, we've had loads of people tweeting us saying, why have you not mentioned that late shot? And it was because no one showed them a replay, because they didn't have the rights. They can't say to the French director, can you put that up? And we all know that quite often the TMOs get access to the TV feed as well. So that's not helping them at all, is it?
French directors have got previous from the Heineken or the Champions Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Just one thing I think it's really important to say, though. You know, for all of the fact we all agree that Fiji were very unlucky and probably overall on the balance of the last 10 minutes certainly deserved something more than they got. Wales, from I would say 30 to 70, were excellent.
Yeah, they were.
You know, they did a really, really good job, and it pains me a little bit, but I thought they played the game brilliantly. They made Fiji go loose really early, and with the Wales have got the players that if you aren't accurate, they will punish you. They've got some really good strike runners. I thought, as you said, Rafael had a fantastic game when he came on. Let's be honest. I mean, Reece Samet had a very quiet game because he didn't have a lot of the ball. He scored a try. Brilliant. I'm really happy for him. I thought, but Adams on the other wing, I mean,
that
he was immense. I mean, yeah, the hit that he put on was great.
That was,
but,
Game changer. That was a game changer because Fiji were really, really rocking Wales at that point. Mm. And it was a momentum killer.
I'll be honest, my biggest relief with VLRZ was not that he scored a try. It was that hit that was put in on him, which was a monster saver. And I was just so glad he got up and he was all right. Because I was like, oh, no. But on a serious point as well, because we're all going to moan in a minute. And, you know, with some of the red cards, yellow cards, and there's going to be all this the game's gone stuff and so on. That game was the perfect advert for some of the big physical hits that you can still be put in if you tackle properly and you put yourself about. Yeah. It was an open Welsh. To me, it's the best game in the World Cup, but it was a massive palate cleanser. And the France New Zealand game was the same. And South Africa Scotland. It just shows there can be physicality in rugby and the players can learn to put these big hits in. Because that
some of them can learn.
But that one by Josh Adams, because it's not just the Fijians who are all renowned for putting, but that one by Josh Adams was superb and was a momentum shifter.
Yeah. And
let's be like, the final point was Wales were under severe pressure, probably more so than England, weren't they? You know,
I think we all expected them to, be honest.
Everyone wanted to, so they did what they needed to do.
The way they've been going into this World Cup, you would have said, no way they're getting out of the group, and you would have half out to Georgia getting something.
And I still think
them close, and you can't see Georgia getting within 50 points if Wales play like that every week.
I still think it's the most open group in the World Cup, though.
Oh, yeah.
That looks a hell of a group going forward now.
Right. But genuinely, congratulations to Wales. I think it was a great win for them against the odds. I think not only that, you know, I think overall they probably just about deserved it on that, the bulk of the play. I think if Fiji had finished it off in the last phase, though, probably no one would have had too much to complain about. Right, England. I'll be honest, we all thought we were going to get hammered. And after 3 minutes...
I didn't think we were going to get hammered. Okay. I didn't think we would win. But...
Yeah, all right. I thought we were going to get hammered.
Argentina by 12, I said.
Yeah,
and
so...
I was very wrong.
Well, after 3 minutes, I was convinced we were going to get hammered. I thought, well done, you absolute knob. Because all you did, regardless of the fact I disagree with a red card, don't put the officials in a position to give you a red card.
And just add, Ed, that was the point I was making because I came on and went, Curry, you idiot. Mm. And I got quite rightly a lot of you like, that's not a red. That was the point I was making. It's like 2 minutes into the World Cup and you've put that in the ref's head. And that's the problem England have going forward, isn't it? And I can see Lodge shaking his head. I know there's a lot you can say about that tackle, but also Ben Earl was making the hit at the same. And I appreciate you've got half a second to make that judgment. But it was just frustrating. And I was genuinely like, at that point, I did fear the worst. I did think if Argentina start chucking it around, Santi gets time on the ball, we're in a lot of trouble here.
Yeah. Loz, do you want to just, I'd like you to explain your frustration because I know you're not frustrated by the referee's decision per se.
Let's the law is correct, but yeah, it's the law is the problem. The law is the problem, and this is where all this bunker review. I don't think you need that. For me, it should only be a red card if there's been serious foul play. That's your first question. Has there been serious foul play? And I will go straight onto the Curry decision. That was an accidental clash of heads. Yes, the people will say he could have got lower. He couldn't in that sort of short period of time where he had to react. The player landed and then there was contact. You cannot change your body shape like that. It's not physically possible. And that's my frustration. They should have then looked at that and gone, well, guys, there hasn't been a serious foul play. So instantly, red card's been removed. It's downgraded to, at worst, a yellow. Then we should start looking for mitigation. We turn around and we say, okay, he had little time to react. We're looking at worst a penalty. And if they give a penalty, okay, I probably would have still moaned, but that's just me. But ultimately, for me, it's not a penalty. At worst, it's a penalty. And then they ended up with a player with a red card. And England could potentially have lost the game, which they've thankfully gone on to win. But moving on that slightly and talking about the England performance, England have been set up lately for that sort of situation to happen, and it played right into them. I want to give brilliant. So I want to give absolute credit to two players, Ben Earl and George Ford, who were both outstanding. Ben Earl, when Curry went off, was like a man possessed. He was. It wasn't as though we'd lost Curry. He played the role of two players. He was everywhere. Yeah.
Laws as well, Laws.
Everyone stepped up. Let's not take anything away from him. But Ford controlled the game. Yeah. His kicking was when we needed him to be absolutely superlative. He was. The drop goals, he could not have hit any sweeter. Every penalty was just well struck as well. And he did superb. But the whole team as a whole stepped up. And I think that's where Ed's going when he mentioned the humble pie before.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say against that is that way of playing isn't going to win England the World Cup. We haven't all of a sudden turned into world beaters.
No.
If anything, I think we've still got exactly the same problems. It's just Argentina were very poor.
Yeah.
My point, and Loz probably will back me because I think we're the two biggest ones about this, is what I liked about Ford was he went, what we have to do here is build a score.
Yeah.
And that's what England haven't done. What I really liked was the nous and the decision making. They made the right decision all the time. They didn't play pretty rugby, but they couldn't. And there's two bits about this for me. I don't know how good that Argentina performance was poor. I don't think anyone saw them playing that badly.
No.
But we've said this about Gloucester. We've said this about England. Put the points on the board when they're there for the taking. The opposition, and Ford was just going, over to you, Argentina. I'm not going to do anything fancy, but you put me in range. I'm taking the points. And suddenly they're 9 points behind. They're 12. They're 15. And that puts a lot of pressure on
them. And they were having to be honest as well, because they knew if they give away a penalty, or any sort of field position in their half, Ford was getting 3 points from it.
His second drop goal was ridiculous. It was so far back and it had room to go, and he didn't have a lot of time to set that one up.
He
and I just
drop goal so sweetly. Why did they let Daly take the long range ones? He could have taken them.
I know, but it was.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
It was just so nice to see us make the right decisions and build lead. Same as Loz, we aren't going to win the World Cup playing like that. We've got to do more. But going back to what I said about Wales, England had to win that game. I know, Ed, you felt they could have got through the group, but for me, they had to settle their nerves. They had to show that they had something about them. And I would have worried if we didn't beat Argentina, because it's just a nicer psychological thing to be in a potential position to come through that group top.
My biggest fear is that the fact that they both will go away justified on a shitty game plan. And it is, though, because he's like, well, boys, this is what's happened. I've told you to play like this, and this is it's come out and it's worked for us, and we carry on like this. And you've got to play some rugby to win at international level.
You
cannot keep playing like that. And it'd be bloody boring.
And I just hope they don't put... I hope they keep that tension on Ford, because my laptop might go out the window if I see Farrell in the 10 shirt again when he gets through.
Maybe
he
gets chilly.
Interject here. So Jim, in terms of the England performance, as we said, it was a fantastic win, and I think overall, I think we were all happy that the team performance. But is there outside of that? Are there any sort of real nagging concerns that, you know? We didn't. I know we only had 14 men, but we really didn't create anything really outside of a drop goal.
No, our back line was pretty dull, wasn't it? It was just a crash ball from Tuilagi, and yeah, I think we're missing that spark, aren't we? We're missing the what Fiji had in abundance, what Wales had too, you know. Like you mentioned before, the lines that George North was running were fantastic. We didn't have anyone doing any of that. So, I mean, keeping the scoreboard ticking over, my God, did we do a good job of that? I just don't think we'll be able to do that, because we won't get enough penetration to be in the right areas to be able to kick penalties and get drop goals. Yanni De Beer, you know, scored all those blooming drop goals against us, didn't he, all those years ago. but they did it in a one-off game. It wasn't like they didn't have an entire run of games where it was loads of drop goals. It was kind of a bit of a one-off. I mean, I know they scored a few others, but in that one game, they just had that game plan, and it still worked. We'll stick with it. And I think what worries me is that England at the moment will go into the next game and they'll try and, because it worked before, they'll try and go. And if it doesn't work, and it might against Japan, it easily could against Chile. I don't think you need to go for that kind of a game plan against Chile. But when you go up against the better teams, that game plan won't work because they'll be ready for it.
Yeah, I mean,
and then we don't have the ability to change to a game plan B either quick enough. We don't realise it and react and change, or even more worryingly, we just don't have a B plan.
Yeah, I'll come to you, Russ, quickly in a second. Just wanted to, it's kind of an open question really to all of you. So the Japan game, Japan, I thought were very poor against Chile. I thought Chile did really well first half in particular, but I thought Japan laboured a bit. I think they ended up piling a couple of tries on at the end through lack of fitness from Chile, which is totally understandable. It was very hot, and also, you know, this is the first time they've ever been in the World Cup for Chile. But I thought Japan were pretty average, and there was that little nagging doubt that if we lost to Argentina, we've got to go. We have to then go into that Japan game. We've got to win all this extra pressure. I'm not at all worried now. Now, maybe I should be, but I can't really see. If you look at the two teams, look at the squads, look at the depth, you look at all the rest of it. Japan struggled against a very, you know, they were a very energetic Chilean side, but they're not. They're an amateur, semi-pro side. You know, they made a lot of yardage. They made a lot of holes. England really should be busting through a lot of that when we play them. Sure,
they should. But the one we haven't seen, we haven't seen Samoa yet, and I'm not saying they'll be any better. We should beat them. I think the point Jim makes about the drop goals would add into this for me is that can be a really useful tool later in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But you've got to add other things to it because it puts an element of doubt and honesty into your mind, because it's like, right, where it worked really well, where England were good at doing it, was in 2003 for a while, where Wilker would just dink it over when, right, this phase is breaking down, I can do it, because that worries teams. And it's got to be one element of a good game plan, isn't it? So Japan and so on, they've got to start showing something, haven't they? And they've got to be, if they can't be expansive, like you said, they weren't as good as I kind of feared they would be. Mm. If they can't start showing something against Japan and Samoa, that's what worries me, because it's probably going to be Wales quarterfinal. And we've just seen, we aren't going to beat Wales with a one-dimensional game plan, especially in the quarters, because there was a World Cup not that long ago. Well, it wasn't long ago, I'm sure, maybe, but they nearly beat us in 2003 where they just had nothing to lose. They will raise their game in a quarterfinal against us. So we've got to have more, like Jim says, than just drop goals or penalty kicks because of the later stages. And I don't know, optimistic, maybe we're holding something back. Don't see it because we would have had to have shown it against Argentina. That was exactly what I was about to make. Was when you go down to 14 men, any game plan you had before goes out the window. It's just win. So, devil's advocate, it's amazing we won. That's the first, that game you just had to win it. Same as Wales, doesn't matter how you win it, just win it.
Yeah. Loz, do you have any? I mean, yeah, I think that's a really important point, isn't it? We are moaning about the game plan, but let's be honest, it wasn't really a game plan. I doubt that was the game plan England wanted to play. We just adapted very quickly. Do you have any real genuine concerns to the rest of the group now, or are you fairly confident?
I don't necessarily have concerns against the other teams now. I'm not being arrogant by that, because I don't, as you said, Japan against that Chile side, they should have, if they were going to be a challenge to us, they need to put 60 points on them, realistically. Yeah. Samoa, we don't know how they're going to be, but there's one thing with Samoa, they're all usually always the same. If you can match their physicality, you usually do get the better of them. And I think one thing that England side won't have is they won't be outmuscled against many teams, certainly not in the group. If they go deeper into the competition, there's a few teams South that potentially Island, could, South yeah. Africa and Ireland, as you say. I'm just concerned, but it's the squad he's picked. At the end of the day, if he's not playing Tuilagi in the centre, he's probably going to play Farrell at 12. And you just and Ollie Lawrence, I think, is a good player, but he's that one-dimensional crash ball as well. And you just want some ball player. How he's gone without taking it, if you're going to go with Slade, players that have played for really. Years, you yeah. take Henry Slade. Yeah. The only way I can see it getting any better is if he was to actually play something like either Smith at 10 and Ford at 12, or say Ford at 10 and Malins at 12, because Malins was a fly out by trade. You got someone then, so you got that second ball playing distributor there, and then potentially someone like Ollie Lawrence at 13. Maybe you could change it up a little bit then. But the trouble is, I'd rather see Malins on the wing instead of Elliot Daly. How Elliot Daly's ended up at that World Cup, I don't know.
I think with Daly, it's his utility, isn't it? He can play fullback, and he can play wing. In theory, he can play centre.
All badly.
I'm not disagreeing.
I know, Red. I know.
The thing is, though, Red, he started at 11 on the wing. I could understand it if he was wearing number 23 and he sat on the bench wearing 23 every week because he covers 13, 11, 14, and 15. I can kind of get that. I can see that. Mm. But to actually start,
I mean, let's.
And that's what does concern me. I can't see there being much change from this way of playing. And that ain't going to get us anywhere.
Some positives, just to quickly finish on England, though. I thought Mitchell played really well. I thought he controlled it really well. I've been a bit critical of Jamie George recently, but I thought George had a really good game. I think he made the most tackles. Itoje was back to his best in terms of turnovers and in terms of sort of just generally being a bit of a nuisance, but on the right side of the law. As you said, Ben Earl was absolutely superb. George Ford was immense. I mean, you know, and one thing I did say in our group chat, and I'm happy that we got a bit of abuse about it, because I think it's quite an interesting debate. And it was, where does that performance sit in terms of the all-time England performances? Now, I think, Loz, you made a really good point, which was, if you're including tests and series, I agree, probably not, actually, when I look back, it's probably not in the top 10. But if we're talking World Cup performances...
Actually what you said.
No, this is become a different topic now.
No, I agree, because I'm happy to concede. My original point was it was in the top five England performances, a professional era. And I think I included 91 in there as well. 91, 95. But certainly since I've been around watching rugby. Now, I will concede I was probably get caught up in the moment. I hadn't been drinking, actually. I was stone cold sober. But I think in a World Cup context, I would say that's probably top five, in the top five, maybe fifth. And I think my list, and I'm very happy, we can come back to this at a later date.
No, you didn't tell us we had to make a list. Look at him. He's like the king of research here.
No. Hang on. Just going to go back to my list. And I'd like to, if people want to chime in on Twitter and stuff when they listen to this pod, I'm very happy for them to call me out on it. So the list I think I made, which was that, obviously, 2003 final. That's number one. I would say the quarterfinal against Australia in 1995, because Australia were world champions then.
Equal second with the semi.
Semi with the All Blacks. Yeah, semi All Blacks 2019. France 2007, France 2001. France 2007, France 1991. I maybe would say I'd chuck out 1991, because it's amateur era and it was a very different. England were a very good side in the early 90s. Argentina 2023. I just think context is important. Down to 14 men.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Without trying, I've got 9.
Well,
87 if you take out 91.
Okay. You are. Is that pure World Cup matches?
Pure World Cup, and in no particular order.
Because when Ed dropped it in the group,
yeah, you beat me to it, Loz, with every one of them.
He turned around. This is one of the all-time great England wins of professional era.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I pointed out the two games against the All Blacks before the 2003 World Cup, the win against Australia for the first time ever before the 2003 World Cup.
New Zealand, Australia, where we went through 500 phases. World Cup wise, and some of these people might chat, but we had 2007 Australia.
They were a very good side then, though.
No one expected us to win.
Australia were crap, mate.
I did, and I put that on the internet.
2019 New Zealand.
Yeah, agreed.
2003 Wales, because we were in trouble. We were in trouble, and they dug it out of nowhere. It's Wales more important than that Argentina game, and I'll come into why you're wrong in a minute, Ed. But anyway,
I'm actually with Ed on that one, personally.
2003 Australia.
Yeah.
2003, right. Probably against France as well. Any game in 2003, because they won it basically on reputation. That team, and that's why those games Loz mentioned in the tests abroad were so important, because it showed England could beat anyone anywhere. And we had a rep suddenly. 95 Australia, the quarterfinal.
Yeah, said that, yeah.
Take out 91, but 91 Scotland, 91 France.
Scotland, if Gavin Hastings had his kicking boots on that day, if he hadn't bottled that kick in front of the post, they would have gone through.
So,
you can't turn around.
I think the thing is,
great England performance with
so
bottles of kick.
A great performance, you have to put some context to it. There were a lot of those games were big group. But this Argentina game, Ed, I think you could review it in a while. They've done fuck all yet. They've won the first game of the World Cup.
I agree, and they didn't do anything.
In terms of performance, what there was a resilience and good game management. That's kind of the bare minimum of what I'd want to see from a really good performance. This is where I'm at,
Russ. I think we don't know whether Argentina are any good.
That's the other key thing.
This is the important thing. Like, I think it's fair to say we were all expecting a hell of a lot more from Argentina that we just didn't get. Now, whether we didn't give them the chance to play because we just dominated the scoreboard and put them under loads of pressure and set piece was really good and all that, or were Argentina just a bit shaky? And actually, does it mean that this whole pool is now fantastically open for that second place and you're going to have Argentina and Samoa and Japan actually having a really, really tight three-way battle?
I think you could well, actually, because Argentina had a little bit been on the slide recently. They haven't been playing. Their game plan's been not very good at all. And
it's the lowest ranking for years.
They haven't been doing too well at all. They've had Santi at 10, and basically they've tried to play a bit of a numb game like England have played. And of course, that's not Santi's way of playing it. But the idea of having him at 10 was that then all of a sudden they could just suddenly chuck it around him.
He's more and more looking a 15, isn't he? I've always maintained that. But I think Jim's point's a very good one. And I think in all seriousness, Ed, if Argentina come out flying in these next few games, that makes this result take on a bit more. I want to see England have a really good performance, and I think they're going to have to, aren't they? Let's be honest, once they get to the quarters, which they should get to now, they're going to have to pull a performance out to get through, because we can't rely, like Jim said, on another team playing as badly as Argentina did. And I think there's probably an element of both. I think they were very poor, but I think England did do enough to make them play badly. But I still don't think it was up there, certainly not a top five.
I'm happy to be debating it. I want to defend my corner briefly before we finish, because and you make some really good points for us, and I totally accept some of those games you threw in there.
I might, you know, I say if England don't do anything in the rest of this group, I'll hold my hands up and totally agree. I'm going to defend my corner now and just say I do think Argentina will bounce back. I think they've got enough in their squad. There's a lot of talent in that squad. They just had an absolute shocker. I think the biggest thing that Argentina got wrong was Argentina decided we're going to just go into an arm wrestle with England, which when you've got 14 men playing, you're playing 14 men. No, you look at what England's weakness has been, getting the ball wide. And it was that's what I couldn't quite grasp was how badly they got it in terms of game management. And I totally understand from your point of view, Russ, that I agree. England's game management was superb. That is a bare minimum, I agree. But and Argentina kind of played into our hands. But context, as you said, is everything. This is the lowest ranking that England have had in the professional era, or joint lowest ranking we've ever had in the professional era as we went into the World Cup. We lost, I think we'd only won, what, we'd only won three games under Borthwick. The squad was being lambasted from pillar to post. The defence is all over the place. The attack is still not great. And there were serious question marks around discipline. And yeah, clearly that showed off in the first minute. You take that out of it.
Then they should all be getting MBEs.
The fact that we won that game. No, but the fact we won that game, not like with a last minute, somebody drops the ball because rather than running into the post like Wales had, but we won that game so comfortably that when Argentina scored their try in the last minute, no one celebrated because we were that far ahead. England, the way they managed that game, and I take your point. We've got to show more in the group. We've got to show more to get through to a semi-final and final if we even dreamed of doing that. But for me, the context of that performance and that result, in you look at everything before the World Cup and the start of that game, I thought it was absolutely incredible that we managed to just basically blow Argentina away and didn't really play any rugby.
I'll be honest with you, I was actually disappointed we let the try in at the end. That was
no, same. I'll be honest, I was the same. I was really annoyed we let the try in at the end. I thought, no, they don't deserve it because we've made them look really shit. But just one final thing before we go, and we kind of referenced it at the beginning of the pod, and I've been reading some stuff on Twitter as we've been going, as you've been chatting away, and I've been looking at stuff. Apparently, the Rugby World Cup are now looking at the anthems, and possibly for the next set of fixtures, which start on Thursday, are going to be maybe moving back to the more traditional way of singing the anthems. The only one I thought kind of worked well, actually, was the Scotland and South Africa.
Yeah, game. So
that was the only one I thought actually this kind of worked.
It was quite,
yeah, but then Scotland nice. Always goes only do about a quarter of their anthem and let the fans sing.
Yeah,
the rest
I think
anyway,
yeah.
Don't they?
Well, that was like so the first one where we all me, you, and Loz watched together. That was like the France one. We were all really excited because normally they cut the professional singer and let the French just sing. And you're like, what's going on here? Mm. Like, you know, it just completely, it should have been like one of those iconic moments of the World Cup, shouldn't it? You know, the French crowd singing the national anthem. But what was interesting is I agree. So my boy finally sat and watched about 20 minutes of a rugby match, and it was Scotland, South Africa, and he was like this song. And it's just, I was like, no, we can't like Flower Scotland. All right, yeah. You can like the South African one. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And he also said something else was hysterical. So the only game of rugby he's ever watched before was the Doughty match where Ed was playing, and he turned around and went, "Ed's not playing." Which in some ways is quite funny because the thought of Ed playing in a brave Scotland side does seem quite apt because he'd have stubbed his toe or something. But yeah, he like,
you really
right.
think that it'd get to the case? It'd ever get to the
stuff? I'm that desperate.
It's so incomprehensible. I can't speak. What?
No, I mean, they have had some bad internationals.
I know, but for once, this isn't going to be a case of getting injured before he gets on the pitch. He's just not going to get selected, ever.
I look forward to you now discovering you've got...
Scottish in the past.
True, actually, that's the point,
I look forward to you discovering you've got a great-great-uncle Angus McPrice or something now.
Annoyingly,
now, yeah, the amps,
my wife technically, because she is, her grandmother was Scottish, she could play international sport for Scotland.
But yeah, they're not good, are they?
She's got,
I understand,
more chance of doing it than you.
Bring it back to the amps.
Jim's lost his signal, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. But bring back the anthems. The one that, I tell you what, the funny one though. I thought, oh my god! As soon as I heard them start it, I thought, oh no, this is not good. Was the Italian one, because when you start the introduction to the Italian anthem and you're using bum 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 bum, and they used the bum bum bums as well, and instantly somebody put on Twitter went and said, you do realise the Argentinian national anthem has a 45-second instrumental before the beginning of the lyric of singing. I'm like, oh my god, it's going to be chaos.
I mean, the only one that would have been good is if they got them to do the haka. But...
or it would have been, say, it would have been really good is if the Spanish had actually qualified, because the Spanish is an entirely instrumental national anthem.
Well, or what they, if they're going to go all in, they should just do the whole English national anthem as well, with the verses that are, you know,
rebellious Scots,
slightly dodgy in these times. But yeah.
Jim, ahead of this weekend, what are you looking forward to the most?
Oh, that's a question.
Rugby wise.
Rugby wise, yeah.
Yeah. No, do you know what? I think it's probably seeing the teams that we haven't seen yet. So I'm keen to see how Samoa play.
Yeah.
Because I would really like Samoa to be up there and be challenging. I just think kind of between now and then, I'm looking forward to some. It's been asked a couple of times from some kind of quite well-known people on Twitter, rugby journalists and ex-players and such, just saying, can we get someone from World Rugby, someone from like the referee's manager or something like that, just talking us through some stuff and just, as part of the commentary, like at halftime or pre-match or whatever, just talk a little bit about what's going on. Because at the moment, the consistency thing is like crazy in the press, and it's not the best example of rugby to those occasional viewers. So I just hope that we have a good week where it's not all about refereeing decisions, and if we have another weekend like we've just had, then that would be superb, because I thought the quality was, you know, was really, really good overall. I'm just looking for those lesser nations to, you know, even if they're not winning games, just to score a few just hold their own a little bit, even if it's only for, you know, 60 minutes of an 80 minute, and then they just can't keep up. But that's what I'm looking forward to.
I want to see an upset.
We haven't had that yet,
not England against England, but I mean, I want to see an upset.
Portugal are playing Wales, so
I'd
be nice.
Funnily enough, I'm just looking through the fixtures, and I think it looks pretty one way traffic. If we look at the fixtures, I'm looking forward to Thursday, because it's the first chance we get to look at the Stade Pierre Moroy in Lille, which is where few of us are going to. So I just wanted to be interested to see what that's going to look like and what it's going to feel like from an atmosphere point of view. France, Uruguay for that one. But then the other games, you've got Namibia, New Zealand, Wales, Portugal, Ireland, Tonga, South Africa, Romania. They all look pretty. We all know what's going to happen.
Ireland, Tonga, I'd like to see, because I think Tonga are the weaker of the three Pacific Island nations, but they're also still a Pacific Island nation, and they will beat the shit out of Ireland as best they can.
Let's be honest.
It'll be interesting to see how Ireland kind of weather that, because, you know, I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to weather it all the way through to a final.
I think, I agree, Jim. It'll be interesting, because Ireland could take, you know, they play a physical game. They're not going to get any, like, ease there, are they? You know, but I think for me, the game of the weekend is Australia-Fiji. Because Fiji are basically in knockout rugby now, aren't they? And I think almost for Australia, the worst thing they could have happened is Fiji to come so close and be denied. Let's put it this way, I don't want to be the first person who's got to tackle Randrandra after that knock. That's going to be in his mind for a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that could be... you imagine... he'll be sitting deep to take a catch off a kick, and God help him. Anybody who's on the other end
you
of that
get
run,
the feeling he might put out a point. He's got, because he's so good, he might put out a performance for the ages to try and make up for that.
And they've got to, haven't they? Because if they don't win, they have to win this game. I think the two bonus points help them mass, but they have to win this game.
Yeah,
if they don't win this, I think they're really struggling, aren't they?
Yeah. It's such a sad situation. There's such a quality, you know, team that have been to the knockout stages in the past, to potentially be playing their third game of a World Cup and it be a dead rubber already.
I think we don't want that.
It's great that we've got the likes of Portugal and Romania and Namibia in the competition. They bring something to it, and they're playing for, you know, boring tries and good performances.
I think one of the frustrations and the things they have to work out for the World Cup to keep developing lesser nations, and I don't regard Fiji as a lesser nation, like we've just said, they're a knockout rugby side previously in the World Cup. They've got to find some way to get them game time. Right, they've played, 14 games since the last World Cup?
Yeah.
Wales have played 40
odd,
and it's just not right, is it? No. That's going to massively affect their performance. They're clearly benefiting from having a super rugby team, but the international sides need more game time, don't they?
To me, I can't understand why they can't organise a Fiji, Samoa, Tonga and Japan Cup. If Australia and New Zealand are going to be so precious about having them in their competition, why they can't play their own.
Mm.
At least they're playing test match rugby together.
Yeah, it's a good point, Loz. I think for me, they should be allowed to go into the rugby championship, because it has done wonders for Argentina.
I think they are looking at this new structure around the World League, whatever it was called. I'm not convinced that the Fiji, for example, are in the right bit of it. I think they should probably be in the top league, or however you want to describe it. But that hopefully, because there's going to be a bit of structure and a bit of fixtures that are absolutely, you know, nailed in every year. I think that might mean they do get a bit more fixtures. But obviously, you're right; they need to be playing the top teams, top tier one teams, and hopefully that will allow them to then develop even further.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, guys. Really do appreciate it. We've got another bumper week ahead. Gloucester obviously away to Saracens in the Cup. It's going to be a difficult one to cover, that one, because I don't believe it's on any sort of coverage. So we'll probably be Radio Gloucestershire. You might find some feed for it if you're very lucky. But on the basis it took Gloucester over 48 hours to take any sort of highlights out, I'm not expecting too much. So obviously, good luck to the lads who get picked. I think it might be a bit of a change side for next week. But as we say, this competition is very much a pre-season build-up to the league starting in October. So anyway, thanks very much, guys. We'll speak again next week. All the best.
Cheers, boys.